Man, oh man, what a milestone. Steve Jobs, co-founder of Apple Computer and one of the preeminent creators of and evangelizers for the digital age, is dead at age 56. Unforgettable movie star playing a dweeb face, I think. He was a dead ringer for William Hurt, I always thought.
Yeah, in his later life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even in the younger, I mean, the younger period, he looks like a young William
all
Hurt.
That hair. Yeah.
He certainly changed the ways we work and play, changed how we communicate, left us on the edge of a media revolution that actually may dwarf the impact of the mere computer. For Jobs, imagining and then bringing revolutions forward was as easy as riding a bicycle.
What a computer is to me is it's the most remarkable tool that we've ever come up with. And it's the equivalent of a bicycle for our minds.
That's Jobs talking to a Library of Congress archivist back in the 1990s when his legacy was intact, but much more, including the iPhone and iPad, was to come. Hard to believe that hokey original Macintosh would change everything. Remember how it looked? Here's Steve Jobs on stage, not professorial, looking more like a hired magician who does birthday parties on the weekend. Even the computer speaks in this track. Listen.
All of the images you're about to see on the large screen will be generated by what's in that bag.
Hello, I'm Macintosh. It sure is great to get out of that bag. Unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, I'd like to share with you a maxim I thought of the first time I met an IBM mainframe. Never trust a computer you can't fix. So it is with considerable pride that I introduce a man who's been like a father to me, Steve Jobs.
Computer voices got a lot better than that event back in 1984. Steve Jobs is a father to much of what we do in work, play, and communications. He had a simple corporate mission, which he would repeat over and over again. We design products, Jobs said, that we would like and would like to give to our friends and family. And anything less than that, we just can't ship junk. Joining us is Stephen Levy, journalist for Wired Magazine. He's the author of Insanely Great, The Life and Times of Macintosh, The Computer That Changed Everything, and The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Commerce, Culture, and Coolness. Stephen Levy, good morning once again.
Good morning.
Your thoughts?
Even though you could, you knew this was going to happen, it's just the shocking and its finality. I mean, I think you talk about how easy it was for him to create revolutions. He did at least six things. I ticked them off in the obituary in Wired.com. That for any one person, that would have been a great career. You know, you could go to the Apple II, the Macintosh, the Pixar. You didn't mention yet. The iPhone, the iPad, I might be missing one, but you get the idea. And I think he had some more in him. That is the tragedy.
Do you remember where you were during that Mac rollout event? I mean,
I remember very clearly because I had actually completed my story for Rolling Stone, or it was just like ready to go in. I met Steve during the development of the Macintosh when I pitched Rolling Stone a story on it. I had started to cover technology and I'd been working for Rolling Stone, and they were a little reluctant to write about a computer. And when I finally got the assignment, I very proudly went to the people at Apple and said, I have wonderful news. We're going to do a story for Rolling Stone. And I thought they would embrace me. Instead, they were a little wary, and it turned out that Steve at first didn't want to do it unless he was guaranteed the cover. later on, he wouldn't have any trouble getting the covers. But he actually had a very testy phone conversation with Jan Wenner where Steve argued, you're making a big mistake by not putting me in the cover. At that point, no one but a movie star or a rock star that had been on the cover of Rolling Stone, but I had an amazing day. I remember very clear the first day I went in there and saw the Macintosh, saw the great team he had gathered, and then went out to dinner with him. And he told me in a much less polished kind of interview that we do in later years about those kinds of dreams and from the clip you played. And at that point, of course, he was fighting IBM. Because Apple was the underdog in that big race.
We're speaking to Stephen Levy, a journalist for Wired magazine, and so here we have Stephen, the death of a man, and we don't know, some other company could have brought us the personal computing things, but not in the way that Steve Jobs did. Some other company could have eventually brought the iPad and the iPhone in some form, perhaps, but not in the way Steve Jobs did. I mean, to a certain extent, it was his larger-than-life persona and his enthusiasm that changed the way we use technology, even more than the software.
Right, and it's interesting, and a lot of the things that we're talking about now really came in the second stage of his career, you know, and it is something really that would have seemed trite in a Hollywood movie that, you know, the guy, the co-founder of a company gets thrown out of his own company, spends 12 years in the wilderness, learns powerful ninja skills that enable him, when he returns to the company, to take it to heights that it never had experienced before. And then, you know, one after another, iPod, you know, iPhone, iPad, the operating system, the Apple stores, one of the most successful retailing operations on the planet. He does that and becomes, you know, this beloved figure that people await his every pronouncement and pack his, you know, corporate launches like Rolling Stones concerts.
And an adopted child born to biological parents of Syrian origin, a beginning that didn't necessarily suggest any that was to come. Before we go, Stephen Levy, can you take us into the sort of deep tech world? Is there a piece of code or some bit of iconography that, you know, is not the the Apple Store kind of thing that we see in the later years that represents Steve Jobs to somebody who might have been there at the very beginning?
I think that what represents Steve Jobs is, you know, when you swipe an iPad right now, I mean, that gesture, having, you know, something then, you know, appear, whether it's you're turning a page or opening a program or getting to something else,
just that's the legacy.
That simple childlike swipe and making something happen, that's what he did for us.
Stephen, you know, when my kids look at glossy photos, my little baby, my little two-year-old, almost two-year-old, because he's used the iPhone, he's inclined, when he touches the picture, to try to make it bigger with his fingers. There's the legacy right there.
Absolutely.
Stephen Levy, thanks so much. Journalist for Wired Magazine, author of the book Insanely Great, The Life and Times of Macintosh, The Computer That Changed Everything. Talking about Steve Jobs, dead at age 56. Steve Jobs, gone at age 56. But for nearly all of those years, he was a guy who loved technology and never stopped being amazed by it.
God, look at that. Amazing. Yeah, it is.
TV in New York, too.
Here he is, decades ago, getting ready for his first television appearance. Listen as he catches himself in his corduroy suit, bearded, with a full head of hair, aviator glasses, maybe even some baby fat, in the TV monitor.
Look, I'm on television.
Hey.
You need to tell me where the restroom is, too, because I'm deathly ill, actually, and ready to throw up at any moment. So.
Yeah, try to cross the hall.
Great. I'm not joking.
Steve Jobs wasn't much of a joker. He was dead serious here a generation ago, fighting for his corporate life against some gargantuan competition.
IBM wants it all and is aiming its guns on its last obstacle to industry control. Apple.
That famous announcement back in 1984 heralded big changes for IBM that even that corporate behemoth couldn't imagine. But it also announced the era of Macintosh. Macintosh, no longer a fashion item or a kind of Apple, the Mac as computer would supersede them all.
We shall prevail.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Jobs directed the evolution of the Apple corporate brand, way beyond chips and software. That bit of Super Bowl advertising you just heard was an instant classic. From the beginning, this prototypical inventor, nerd, college dropout — he dropped out of Reed College in Oregon, it's about the least techie school you could ever pick — he left it to change the world. Inventing the first successful personal computer was just the opening milestone for Steve Jobs, collaborating back then in San Jose with his old pal Steve Wozniak, speaking here to the BBC.
We had this incredible technology already developed, thanks to me, which was the computer. We didn't have to go seek money with ideas on paper of something we could do. It was a total revolution.
Perhaps revolution was always what Jobs and his co-conspirators at Apple were selling. Here is John Sculley, who was CEO at Apple for a time. Jobs convinced him to take the helm from Pepsi so he could go off and pursue his own innovations. Did Scully find Jobs convincing?
And then he looked up at me and just stared at me with this stare that only Steve Jobs has. He said, "Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world?" And I just gulped.
Scully was just a placeholder, though. When Jobs saw where Apple could go and where the business was headed, he returned to the company he founded in 1997. It was a company that had lost its way. No problem. Jobs could fix that. Is the future gadgets? Is it software? Is it communication? The internet? Wireless? Yeah, he answered. It's all of that.
We combine all the disciplines under one roof. We own the second highest volume operating system in the world and what many consider to be the best. We write lots of applications. We have great industrial design and we know how to make great devices. And there's not another company in the world that has all that.
And to give you some scale, this is what it looks like. Again, you can just pick this thing up, it almost floats.
This is how you turn it on. This is your music. And this is a call on your iPhone.
Steve Jobs, the master of marketing, of hardware design, of software. But mastering his own biological hardware proved to be the only summit he couldn't reach. His health was a chronic issue. His battle with cancer only the most visible sign of the forces ravaging his body. It makes you wonder what deep frustration he might have harbored for his continually malfunctioning body. But he never talked publicly about any of that. And at this commencement address in 2005 at Stanford, he told his students to value the flaky, the oddball, the most human voices in looking for the next big thing. His inspiration? The flaky, oddball Whole Earth catalog.
On the back cover of their final issue was a photograph of an early morning country road. Beneath it were the words, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." It was their farewell message as they signed off. And I have always wished that for myself. Stay hungry, stay foolish.
He was hungry and foolish to the end, thin and gaunt and bald physically. Mentally, he conveyed nothing but confidence and a faith that things, in fact, could be perfect. Like his latest rollout earlier this year, his head and all of ours soon will be in the cloud.
Now, some people think the cloud is just a hard disk in the sky, right? And you take a bunch of stuff and you put it in your Dropbox or your iDisk or whatever, and it transfers it up to the cloud and stores it, and then you drag whatever you want back out on your other devices. We think it's way more than that. And we call it iCloud. It's completely integrated with your apps. And so everything happens automatically, and there's nothing new to learn. It just all works. It just works.
It just works. Steve Jobs there a few months ago, his body frail, his voice full of confidence. That revolution, cloud computing on Apple's and many other platforms, will produce a revolution that Jobs did not live to see, but I suspect in his imagination, he got there long before the rest of us. Just another wave of change hitting the beach.
This is Natasha from Miami, Florida. From the Macintosh, I began to learn how to use computers on in first grade to the iPhone 4, Jobs innovations had a tremendous technological and social impact on my generation.
What was the impact of the Apple generation on you? More of your views all morning. And we're getting texts and all sorts of audio from 8778MyTake. Feel free to call and join this conversation. Sarah in Davie, Florida, texted us this. I worked at Apple for 4.5 years, and through his technology and his passion for learning and improving, which was passed down even to us, Apple Store employees, I know he loved what he did. It is thanks to his work and that today, no longer an Apple employee, I enjoy my job as a graphic designer and a video editor every day. I will always remember him when my Mac chimes as I turn it on every morning. That's sweet.
Yeah, it is.
It's an unforgettable noise, too, a little sound, that ring.
Well, it's one of those iconic things that it is friendly. It's a friendly.
I wonder if it's friendlier than that Windows sound. We don't want to get into that.
No, we're not going to get into that.
Paul
Right.
Paul in Ellis Island, New Jersey, wrote this. I have used Apple products. I like them. Can I live without them? Yes. As Jobs himself once said about computers, do we live longer because of them? No. The mobile telephone, not the iPhone alone, has had much more of an impact and continues to have much more of an impact. Greatest impact of all may be their radiation. A digital revolution in many, many facets as we explore the legacy of Steve Jobs, who died at age 56 yesterday. Tell us what you think at 8778MYTAKE or just post to facebook.com/thetakeaway.
Stay hungry, stay foolish.